New president, new administration. Back to the same old policies.
Here we go again.
Know your world. It's happening here. On 55 KRC, the talk station.
The 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Tuesday. End of my three-day weekend, that's for sure.
Out all the time. The world's an imperfect place.
Well, there is that. And a very happy Tuesday to you. Thanks to Gary Jeff Walker for covering for me yesterday. I got a text from him after the show saying he had a really nice time and looking forward to me taking more time off. So I thoroughly appreciated my three-day weekend. It was really just great sleeping in. I just absolutely adore sleeping in. And as I said last week, you know, getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know what that's like? That's like getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, I hope you had a wonderful weekend. Joe Strecker, hope you enjoyed your three-day weekend, too. Good to see you back. And the phone over here, if you'd like to comment about anything going on in the world, got a good rundown here at 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or #550 on AT&T phones. And, when of course, you can't listen live, just go to the podcast and blog pages of 55krc.com. Thanks again to Joe Strecker for being there and for lining up the program today. Vice Mayor Smith, Christopher Smitherman returns to talk, yes, about issues 1 and 2 and 3. All three. Of course, we've heard from him before. He's a definite yes on 1 and 2 and an outstanding across-the-board no on 3, like everyone is. This is an article, I believe it was in the Cincinnati Inquirer today, that's talked about that. Everyone except the people who are going to receive the money agree that issue 3 is a bad thing. Republicans, Democrats, Charterites, Greens. It screws up your flexibility. That's really what it boils down to. I mean, there is no reason whatsoever to hamstring the budgeting process. And man, you know, it's speaking of it, it's going to be a train wreck. Sharon Coolidge from the Inquirer is going to return to talk about reporting from the Inquirer, headline, in Cincinnati, turmoil and term limits will bring unprecedented change to City Hall. Yeah, change unprecedented without question. I was going to say it's going to be turmoil. And that's really why I'm hopeful David Mann comes out on top. And as politically opposite as David Mann and I are, at least he's a diplomat and he's done the job before and he understands and he has dealt with some chaos in the past. You know, throw Aftab Perval on that job, wet behind the ears still, doesn't really know what it entails. And he's going to be trying to herd the cats that will be the next council. I mean, seriously, does anybody have any concept as to who's going to be elected to serve as council members in November? I mean, there are so many people running that you need the special deck of playing cards with their faces and their titles and things on it. I don't know. Sharon, I'm certain, will offer some insight into the chaos that is expected. Raymond Hughes, expert on the Great Escape. We've heard from a local veteran, Mr. Doolin, who was actually in Stalag Luft 3. Raymond knows all about the entire situation. He'll be on at 8:30 to talk about an Empower Youth seminar he's going to be giving on that. And then our Ask the Expert today from UC Health, Dr. Richard Becker. What is a COVID-19 long hauler patient? I think I am, or was, about 5+ weeks, 6 weeks of it. So we'll find out and see if there's anything that means anything in the long term. I'm a little worried about getting bad news or some bad information that, well, if you had it for a real long time, then you've got these problems now on your hands permanently or into the unforeseen future. Anyhow, we will learn together on that one. What's going on in the world? Real quick here, no one knows why. If you do know why, please let me know. Call me up. Vice President Kamala Harris will be joining. Where's she going to go? Anybody want to guess where Kamala Harris is going? No, it is not the border where she has been. Her presence has been requested over and over and over and over and over again, considering that, President Biden has place the responsibility of dealing with the border crisis in her capable hands. But she'll be coming to Cincinnati on Friday. The White House announced this yesterday, I guess. Also, thanks Scott Wortman for summing it up in the Enquirer. No further details of the visit were released. It is not even known whether the Brent Spence Bridge will factor into her appearance on Friday, writes Scott Wortman. Well, how many presidents have stood in front of the Brent Spence Bridge and promised a new one? I know Barack Obama did. Oh, look, Scott Wortman even mentioned that. Back in 2011, promised new bridge, more infrastructure. Joe, would you call that a shovel-ready project? We're shoveling? All right, yes, indeed. Digging our own graves, more like. Okay, so Kamala Harris will not be going to the border on Friday because she will be busy here in Cincinnati doing no one knows what. Oh, and Press Secretary Jen Psaki, deer in the headlights Jen, who is probably the lamest press secretary ever. But then again, it's a thankless job, and she's got a lot of very difficult questions that are placed in front of her, like, how come Kamala Harris hasn't gone to the border in the last 34 days? Well, when asked questions like that, she gets a little, it's troubled. She suggested yesterday Vice President Harris' focus is, and this is her words, is not on, her focus is not on the border, right? But on a diplomatic level. Well, I would certainly have to ask her team about this specifically, but I will tell you also that her focus is not on the border. It's on addressing the root causes in the Northern Triangle. That's why the majority of her time has been spent on working on a diplomatic level. She's going to have a bilateral meeting with the president of Guatemala this afternoon. She's going to speak with the president of Mexico next week. And she's working with them to ensure that there's systems put into place to reduce the amount of migration coming from these countries, but also to address the root causes. And that's really what the president asked her to do. Huh. Okay, all's well and good. Joe, don't you remember Donald Trump doing that? Negotiating with the Guatemala and the Honduras to keep them there? Also got agreement from the Mexican president to house and keep the migrants there while they waited for their U.S. trials. Yeah, that was done. That was already in place. What happened? Joe Biden undid it. Now, Kamala Harris is going to go back and redo it? Unbelievable. She'll be here in Cincinnati on Friday. Hotbed of the migrant crisis right here. This is where it's all going on. Let's go to the phone and see what Justin's got this morning. Hey, Justin, happy Tuesday to you. Welcome to the show.
Hey, happy Tuesday, Brian. Glad you're back, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Why isn't it being reported about the vote audit in Maricopa County that the Democrats sent 73 lawyers down there to try and stop the vote audit?
I did read that there was a vote audit going on, Justin. What is the status of that right now? Because you're right, not a whole lot of people are talking about it.
It's in limbo right now because the Democrats have 10 days to file an injunction to stop the audit from happening. It's still going on right now, but it's an legal battle. But
okay.
Why would they send 73 lawyers down there to stop the audit?
It does sound like an excessive number there, doesn't it, Justin?
A little bit.
I don't know, but I guess I would like to see what argument are they making with a straight face that justifies them seeking an injunction to stop what I guess should turn out to be in their favor, right? I mean, come on, the election was totally above board. There's nothing to see here. Why would they argue to stop that whole thing? I mean, maybe it's a rhetorical question for you, Justin, but, you know, somebody's got to stand in front of a judge and make the argument or write it down in a legal brief, and you got to do that with a straight face and put your name on the bottom line. So I wonder which of the 73 drew the short straw on that one. We'll see. Justin, if you find anything else, give me a call and let me know on the update on that one. In the meantime, I'll see if I can dig something up. Take care, my friends. Stay well. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. apparently Ohio's losing a seat. Yeah, well, got some other shakeups with the census results. Democrats didn't fare real well. Some are saying it could have been a lot worse. But when you look at where the seats where the seats have been taken away due to population loss, I think it speaks volumes, although sadly Ohio is caught up in that mix as well. Midwest, not the place to be right now, but then again, neither is New York or California. 515 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station, opportunity for me to mention one of my favorite restaurants, and that is Coming up on 519 at 55 Care CD Talk Station. Again, happy Tuesday to you. Where in the hell should I begin? It's like miscellaneous potpourri kind of day here. All these different articles and all these different directions to go. And we got it's terrible, terrible numbers about the situation with the police departments. And then oddly enough, and I had the actual news reporting on it. Portland's mayor is now asking for help to get his city back. And there's actually a Wall Street Journal op-ed piece on that. Portland is mugged by reality. Mayor Ted Wheeler has an epiphany about riots and destruction. So, it's just finally is realizing that, you know, supporting the looters and the anarchists and what they do and apologizing for them doesn't do anything but, well, entrench them. Businesses struggling in Oregon are begging him to do something about it. I see there's other articles of black business owners plead for help in Minneapolis's no-go zone. Black merchants, once thriving corner of 38th Street and Chicago Avenue, said police have abandoned the blocked-off intersection, creating a dangerous autonomous zone. When you tell police not to go there, and they set up an autonomous zone, and you don't do anything to clean them up. It dries up business because everyday Joes, regardless of political stripes, or Janes, or Pats, as the case may be, they're afraid to go there to shop. Duh. Anyway, struggling businesses in Portland, Oregon, dealing with vandalism and violence 9 months. It's been since the protests began. Ted Wheeler Friday called for the city's residents to assist authorities. Authorities, you know what that word means? That's police. Asking residents to assist police in their efforts to, quote-unquote, unmask members of the, quote-unquote, self-described anarchist mob. Please, people, let us know who these masked thugs are so we can bring them to justice through arresting them. Need police to do that, don't you? The mayor had to put a state of emergency in effect in Portland through today. Through yesterday anyway. It may still be in effect. I don't know. Concerns about potential unrest on the trial of Derek Chauvin. Wheeler said, the city's beginning to recover, but self-described anarchists who engage in regular criminal destruction don't want things to open up to recover. They want to prevent us from doing the work of making Portland better for everyone. They want to burn. They want to bash. Yep. Where has he been for 9 months? This is the kind of thing that normal, sane people, again, regardless of political stripe, could have told you 9 months ago when the place is being torched for the first time. The only apologies that were issued in connection with that were from CNN and their leftist obvious bent. And the burners, looters, and protesters themselves. You know, they don't interview the everyday guy on the street. You know, what's your perception of the looting and violence going on in Portland? You know, and what political affiliation are you? Well, I'm a Democrat, and I think it's crazy. I don't know what these people think. These people, he said, racist. No, I mean burners, looters, and rioters, regardless of color. Anyway, I don't know what these people think they're going to accomplish by burning down neighborhoods and drying up businesses and trashing otherwise profitable businesses that pay taxes into the system, but it doesn't make any sense to me. I think it's crazy. And then you can put an R or a D or an I or a G after that statement, and no one could argue with it, except the likes of CNN and the people who are lighting fires. And at least you got Portland's Mayor Ted Wheeler now on the right side of the ledger because his city is dying. Apparently, last Monday, a group of about 80 people caused nearly $20,000 worth of property damage to a Boys and Girls Club in Northeast Portland. A Boys and Girls Club. Oh, we made a statement. Previous Friday, police declared a riot amid reports of gunshots, broken windows at the First Christian Church, and anti-police graffiti at the Arlene Schnitzer concert hall. Two hotbeds of racist activity there, Joe. You know, it's all about that First Christian Church and the evil that's going on over the Boys and Girls Club. We got to do something about that. And here's an strange turn of events. The man who defunded a giant chunk of the police budget, if I recall correctly, it seems to me I read somewhere it was like $27 million or something. I'll see if I can find the fun fact. But Wheeler now expressing support for the Portland police. Told them to use all legal strategies to prevent further violence or property damage. Kettling, one of the approved strategies, described as a controversial tactic in which police surround the crowd to confine it to one area. Oh, that sounds so controversial, doesn't it? Mayor noted the local Black Lives Matter leaders have, quote, already stepped forward to denounce the self-described anarchists. Wheeler said he would work with local authorities to arrest and prosecute those who commit acts of violence. Together, we can make a stand. We're going to do what we can today. I'm also asking for your help to make a stand to take back our city. And oddly enough, timing couldn't be ever. Maybe he, you know what? Maybe Wheeler's words incited violence. Maybe Wheeler's plea to work with police to identify and assist these local authorities to unmask the mob and prosecute them. Maybe that's why, well, within hours of his public plea, police had to declare a riot in the northeast part of the city after rioters began damaging buildings. How's that working out for you? Oh, and it's not working out real well for law enforcement. The far left, and that's all these folks represent, the ones that are screaming about getting rid of the police and actually having some terrific success doing it. Not necessarily because the cities are doing the defunding, although many are. It's the anger and resentment expressed by such a small portion of the population, and that has been echoed over and over again by a leftist media to give you the idea that the vast majority of us hate the police and think they're irredeemable. Yeah, that can have an impact on who wants to be a police officer. And oh, look, headline, police shortage, cops retiring in droves, recruiting crisis, applications historically low. Number of NYPD police officers leaving the force retired last year spiked 75%. You know what that translates to? More than 5,300 officers, or about 15% of the New York Police Department's force, have either retired or put their papers in to retire. They're going to get what they want, maybe not through legislation, maybe not through defunding. It's just because nobody's going to want to do the job anymore. 527 right now, 55KRCD Talk Station, your wellness center, home of bioidentical hormone repair. By 5:31 and a happy Tuesday. Coming up at the top of the hour news, we'll dive on into, what I think you can get your popcorn out, put your feet up, and maybe be optimistic about. The Supreme Court has accepted oral arguments. They've accepted the case. They've granted a writ of certiorari on a Second Amendment case that really could have a profound effect, the biggest effect on gun ownership since the Heller case. Back in 2008. We'll get to the details on that. I see Corey's on the phone with a comment about guns. Let's get his call before we start local news. Corey, welcome to the program.
Hey, morning, Brian. Hey, I sent you a link. There's going to be a gun rally, how gun owners put on this Saturday, and the guest speaker is Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia. Going to be at the Ohio Capitol, the West Lawn of the Capitol building, and Josh Mandel is going to be speaking along with other local politicians who's running for office, and invite's been put out to a bunch of others as well. Timken's been invited. Some senator candidates have been invited, along with the governor candidates have been invited as well.
Wow.
And I put the sent a message to Thomas Massey. If you talk to him today by chance, it'd be great if he could attend too. But,
yeah, I see it says the event is free to the lawful public, but registration is required. You got to go to ohiogunowners.org, and then there's a sub thing, Back the Blue Rally, underneath where you can register. So, again, that's this Saturday, May 1st, and it starts at 9:30 a.m., according to the info you sent me, Corey, which I appreciate. And,
right.
And
you'll, so I encourage anybody to attend if they can. We've had these before and had 2,000 people on the lawn. It's an open carry event, perfectly legal to carry your firearm while you're there. Just do it in a responsible manner. We expect there to be Antifa possibly trying to infiltrate. That's why there's a registration to know who's coming to try to counter that.
Fair enough. That's prudent practice right there, Corey. You want to know who's there? Require registration. Sorry, you're not on the list. You got to pre-register. Thanks, Corey. Again, it's ohiogunowners.org is where you'll find the information and details and registration for that. Corey, take care of yourself. Stay well, my friend. Let's get what Tom's got this morning. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program. Happy Tuesday to you.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Hope you enjoyed your day off yesterday.
Oh, yes. Staring at the back of my eyelids at this time yesterday morning, and I loved it.
Yeah, that's always good. I went on vacation last week, and it was almost as actually, in some cases, it's more work sometimes going on vacation than it's going to work.
That is true, but that was not the case for me over the weekend.
Good for you. And the reason I called is your story. Obviously, this idiot out in Portland and wanting to hey, let's take our city back. Well, you shouldn't have given your city away in the first place.
Exactly.
You knucklehead. You know, you learn that in a lot of different scenarios in life, you know, in marriage, dealing with kids at work. When you give up ground, you give up rights, you just willingly give things up. It's very, very difficult to get them back.
That is true.
So, you know, that's just common sense. You know, and I know the left is very, very short on that common sense, but that's all it is. So.
Well, and now, but they have one more learning experience. We can point to Governor or to Mayor Wheeler and say, "Look, you idiots! Even your own guy, the most staunch advocate for these rioters and protesters' attitudes and opinions, has capitulated and realized that was a mistake. He screwed up. His city is falling apart, and he's desperate." Now he's on the side of right. He's woken up. He's truly woke. He's on the right side of the argument now. It's good. We've got him to point to as someone who finally woke up, the right side of waking up. Appreciate it, Tom. You take care of yourself. Coming up, more phone calls if you like. 749-5500, 800-823. It is 5:40, fast approaching 5:41 of 55 KRCD Talk Station. Brian Thomas right here, glad to be back, and thanks again to Gary Jeff Walker for covering yesterday. Got the team back together, the band back together. Joe Strecker, executive producer, back where he belongs, and in front of a stack of stupid, so why not? Oh, and I normally don't talk about the Oscars because they're stupid, and I hate Hollywood, generally speaking. I do not like actors, you know, telling us how we should live our lives. They obviously have a very difficult time managing their own affairs, so aren't quite prepared to take off the challenge of managing all of our affairs. I think they're obviously just a bunch of malignant narcissists in most cases. Their job is to act, and beyond that, to hell with all of them. And pretty much that apparently the feeling of most people in the United States of America. The Oscars had the worst ratings they've ever had. Now, last year was the lowest it's ever been. Last year, 24 million people tuned in to watch it. That was last year. This year, only 9.85 million people tuned in to watch the Oscars. they say in its heyday, the record actually was 1998, 60 million people tuned in. I know, Joe. I mean, can you imagine? But it used to average between 40 and 50 million people every year, down to 9.8. That is what I call a great awakening. Let them have their little party and their little circular pleasure fest, and we'll just all ignore it, and that will be good for everyone. But it's good to be at the Oscars. I guess if you're one of the lucky acting and directing nominees that they had here again from the stack of stupid. The gift bag. You get a
phrasing?
Gift bag.
Phrasing.
And it was worth $205,000. Yeah, they donated all the money, right, Joe? Sure, sure they did. Gift bags contain this year. I guess there must have been certificates. Certificates for free liposuction, and that says something. You're just presuming that these Hollywood folks need liposuction. That's rather insulting. Anyway, I don't know if it's a transferable gift certificate. Maybe you can give it to your friend who needs liposuction. Anyway, free liposuction, designer skin creams, something everyone definitely needs. And I know this is on your short list. Go ahead and charge it, even though you owe money on your credit card already. Go ahead and buy yourself a gold-plated cannabis vaporizer. Gold-plated. You can put that on right on top of your gold-plated shark bar, shark tank. Affirmation candles, no idea what that is. Vegan bubble bath, a must-have item. Let's see, IV vitamin infusions. You can get those locally over at your wellness center. A getaway to French Polynesia and a whole lot more. So there, that sums up adequately your Oscars. There's been your Oscar update this Tuesday morning. Maybe they'll just quit showing it. That would be really good. And this one I found really hard to believe. I saw the footage of this, and it's a frightening accident. Again, over in the stack of stupid. This is down in Florida, and a Florida Highway Patrol, a patrol trooper's dash cam camera shows this vehicle. It's going 111 miles an hour. It hits the curb, goes airborne, crashes into a car dealership. I mean, it's just a horrific crash. Driver identified as Jennifer Carvajal, now facing charges including DUI and reckless driving after the crash happened on Sunday. She's 24. The 24-year-old driver, Jennifer Carvajal, was already on probation for a prior DUI manslaughter conviction at the time of the incident. That one, a 22-year-old passenger, was thrown from her vehicle and died. Now she's at it again. Video shows her vehicle making a hard right turn, launching into the air after hitting an embankment. Apparently, the sergeant who had the dash cam video was trying to overtake her vehicle and stop it, but it ended up sailing over a fence. She suffered minor injuries, was the only one inside the vehicle wearing a seatbelt. 19-year-old in the front passenger seat reportedly thrown into the rear of the car while the 20-year-old who was ejected managed to survive. Charges she's facing are expected to be upgraded after the 23-year-old passenger was pronounced dead on Sunday. In 2014, this is really what put it in the stack of stupid, when she was 16 years old, she was arrested and charged with DUI manslaughter and driving without a license after another fatal crash in the same area. During that one, she was speeding, ran a red light, her SUV hit a car and killed 52-year-old Keith Davis. She was 16, charged an adult, got 5 years in the state prison, but, well, they let her out early. October 2019, they let her out, only to be arrested again in May of 2020 for a drug-related probation violation and sentenced to 5 additional years of probation, followed by this 111-mile manslaughter. Great.
The aristocrat.
You know it. 546, 55KRC, the talk station. KRC, the talk station. Happy Tuesday. Supreme Court taking a new gun case and could have a profound impact on these crazy laws going on in the world. We'll talk about that at the top of the hour news. Get your thoughts and comments. I know Kamala Harris is proposing an assault weapons ban, trying to take away your modern sport rifle from you. Anyhow, back to the stack of stupid. Do you know who I am? You know those people we're talking about. You try to get out of a ticket. Do you know who I am? I'm Chris Silbach. I'm on city council. Remember that?
Nobody cares.
Exactly. Michigan State Police released body cam video. You know they got you on camera, so better mind what you say, even if you are twice the legal limit drunk. Shows a Democratic state representative talking about his relationship with, of all people, this is not going to buy you any love, Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
Nobody cares.
This during a drunk driving arrest. Representative Jewel Jones, in addition to the driving under the influence charge, reportedly charged with resisting arrest and weapons possession. Oh! During this this confrontation with the officer, she can be heard threatening to call the Democratic governor. He also refused, or he, rather, Jewel is he. He also refused to present his ID when asked. Quote, and I'll do as much of the quote as I can, given I have FCC compliance issues with his statement. Quote, I don't give an F, bro. When I call Gretchen, obviously referring to Gretchen Whitmer, when I call Gretchen, I'll need y'all's ID badge numbers and everything. It's not going to be good for you. I'm telling you, I run y'all's budget, bro. Close quote. Jones, who's 26, initially arrested, when his black Chevy Tahoe bearing, this is his vanity plate. Tell me this doesn't want to make you, at least metaphorically, punch him square in the face. His vanity plate is elected. 26 years old, elected. Narcissist, without question. Anyway. Apparently his Chevy Tahoe bearing the elected vanity plate drifted erratically across multiple lanes before he pulled off onto the shoulder and rolled into a ditch. Reportedly blood alcohol twice the legal limit. Law enforcement also discovered a Glock in his glove compartment. Someone tells me, something tells me this guy is probably one of these anti-gun Democrats anyway. But you're driving around liquored up, you're not supposed to have the gun. He was elected in 2016, previously served in the Inkster City Council. Anyway, once in the police car, this after his DUI arrest, Joe told the officer, tell Joe who you have handcuffed, okay? Referring to Colonel Joseph Gasper, the director of the Michigan State Police. He said, wake his A-word up. Now, he obviously had to lawyer up at some point, Jewel Jones. And the lawyer speaking for him, his name, Ali Hamoud. Lawyer Ali Hamoud had this to say. This is his defense. First off, his client was not threatening officers in any way. Okay. Second, and I'll just read you a quote. I think he was hitting it hard. Joe, but to come up with this level of creativity and defend the indefensible, this is what lawyers do. Quote, anything he said regarding budgets and the governor was an attempt to stop them, the police, from using excessive force. Close quote. Right.
Whatever.
Thanks, Liam. It's Cuts, 556. Whatever. It's all racism. Yeah, that's what it is. Threaten them. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. Let's talk about gun control and the efforts which may very well stop dead in their tracks. If things go the way, well, at least I hope them to, Supreme Court just agreed to hear a really, really important case. We'll talk about that coming up and plus more right after the news.
Stand by your morals and embrace your principles.
Like any good conservative.
They're the values heard here and could save our country.
55 KRZ, the talk station.
605, almost 606 at 55 KRZ, the talk station. A very happy Tuesday to you. Brian Thomas back and glad to be. Thanks again to Gary Jeff Walker for covering for yesterday. Good to see Joe Strecker, executive producer here. And glad to see the rundown includes Vice Mayor Christopher Smitherman coming up at the bottom of the hour to talk again about issues 1, 2, and 3. And just, again, so pleased to see written up in the Cincinnati Inquirer pointing out what I think anybody who's paying attention to knows, that no one, I mean, no one of any political stripe is in favor of this. And again, it's not that they're against affordable housing. That's the issue $350 million upfront allocation forever. It's just that it's a terrible idea. So liberals, conservatives, independents, greens, communists, socialists, we're all against it. And we'll hear from Vice Mayor Smitherman on that. Plus, the mayoral campaign, get his thoughts and impressions on that one. Sharon Coolidge is going to join the program from the Enquirer to talk about turmoil and term limits being an unprecedented change, or rather bringing an unprecedented change to Cincinnati City Hall. And that is, without question, an understatement. I don't know. I mean, I can only pray for good things that will come out of this November election. And of course, the primary. But wow, what a complete different set of dynamics it's going to be with a new council and a new mayor. Anyhow, 749-5500, 800-823 talk. What I wanted to dive on into is the, and I think it's fantastic, and I'm very optimistic, and perhaps I shouldn't say that without here, let me knock wood. Supreme Court announced that they're going to be hearing it. They've granted certiorari to a New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Corlett, which call potentially transformative insofar as the Second Amendment is concerned. Now, this case involves something that I think we had something very similar to here in the state of Ohio up until the Heller decision. Anyway, the New York State's handgun licensing law, which has been on their books since 1913, and this is why hardly anyone can carry concealed in New York. It requires anyone who wants to carry a handgun in public, they must demonstrate, quote unquote, proper cause in order to obtain a license allowing them to carry a handgun in public. Now, Heller already determined that you have a right to keep and bear arms in your home. And there was some limiting language in that, saying that, you know, a lot of state laws which are on the books shouldn't be interfered with, or Heller shouldn't be interpreted to specifically overturn those. So in the 10-plus years it's been since Heller, there have been a lot of laws on the books, and a lot of them haven't been challenged. And this is one that finally has been challenged. It made it all the way up through the court system, and the Supreme Court is going to decide. Now, what does proper cause mean? What do you have to do? I mean, who do you have to, should I say, service in New York in order to get a proper handgun license? Well, you have to demonstrate it in one of several ways. If you wish to use a gun for hunting or target practice, you'll get a license that limits you to using your firearm for hunting or target practice, but it restricts your gun use for any other purpose. Now, people in certain kinds of work can get a license as well. For example, the one that was used in the article I read, a storekeeper can be issued a limited license allowing the storekeeper to keep the gun in the store for protection. Alternatively, like a bank messenger can appeal to ask for a license to carry a gun because they're carrying money or transporting money back and forth. But to obtain an unrestricted license, and that's the salient point here, I want one that I can use for whatever reason I want. I just want to carry the gun around with me just in case. That is not going to get you a license in New York. To get one of those, New York courts have established that an applicant must, quote, demonstrate a special need for self-protection distinguishable from that of the general community or of persons engaged in the same profession, close quote. So if you're just a regular Joe and you're facing the same problems and trials and tribulations that society at large is facing, in other words, you've got a city with a runaway crime rate, with assaults and batteries and property crimes soaring through the roof, murders gone through the roof. You know, here I am thinking about Chicago. This is a New York case, but still, that's not good enough. You can live in the worst crime-ridden neighborhood in New York City, but you're living in the worst crime-ridden neighborhood in New York City along with a whole bunch of other people who are facing the same challenges. Yeah, getting robbed, getting attacked at gunpoint or knife point or something. Where in so many other states, you could pull out your concealed carry license, no problem getting one gun, and, well, defend yourself accordingly. Nah, not in New York. I wonder who's the guy or person that gets to make the decision on whether or not you have a special need. Someone may be able to get a license, but probably more likely not, get a license because they have a particular fear of a stalker, for example. But if you simply want to carry a gun because of your fear that it might be useful in some situation, sucks to be you. So in this particular case, this is the, again, New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Corlett. The plaintiffs include a New York State gun rights group. Of course, that would be the name plaintiff. as well as two New York men who applied for a license to carry a handgun in public and were, of course, denied. They claim that law-abiding citizens have a Second Amendment right to carry a gun in public, and the Supreme Court now, with the 6-3, at least in some cases conservative majority, it's expected might agree with them. There's been some shakeups on the court of late, as you might be aware. And although Justice Roberts isn't quite reliable, the newest Supreme Court justices should be, based upon their prior decisions. Now, since Heller has come out, there have been a lot of cases that have gone through the lower courts, and they have, come up with this sort of two-tiered approach to addressing it. And the Supreme Court may very well dispense with it. So, right now, 10 federal appellate courts apply a two-step analytic framework, and that's in quotes. It was some words used by Judge Stephen Higginson in one of the decisions. But under this framework, severe burdens on core Second Amendment rights, severe burdens, are subject to strict scrutiny. Now, I've talked about this in the past, and they teach you this in law school. There are various levels of scrutiny placed upon government, depending upon which amendment to the Constitution you're talking about. So, for example, the Supreme Court in prior decisions holds dearly and valuable the right to free speech. That's that Brandenburg standard that came out in the late 60s where, you know, even someone calling for the eradication of Jewish people in a hate speech, a Klan guy, that's protected. As long as more speech can solve the problem and offer maybe a more rational approach, people didn't take to the streets and start killing Jewish people. That's Napolitano and I have talked about that many times. Strict scrutiny. You can't burden free speech. And if you do, you must have the most narrowly tailored restriction, and it must be applied to something that is a compelling government interest. So, government, you got to have an overwhelming interest to curb any speech, and any speech you curb has to be done so in the narrowest possible way. That's strict scrutiny. So as to certain core Second Amendment rights, they apply that. But less onerous laws or laws that govern conduct outside of the Second Amendment's core principles are subject to what it's called a more permissive standard called intermediate scrutiny. So they're going to give the government a lot more leeway as long as it doesn't deal with core Second Amendment values. You may be thinking, well, what the hell's core Second Amendment versus this area of government or area of laws where they have more leeway? Good question. That's why it's such a screwed up standard. And maybe that's why the Supreme Court has finally decided to take up this case and offer a solution that we can all apply evenly. Now, what Kavanaugh do back in 2011, we have an indication that Kavanaugh's on the side of gun advocacy and ownership. He would have struck down a law that banned semi-automatic assault weapons and required gun owners to register their firearms. How about Amy Coney Barrett? Also called for a stricter Second Amendment when she was a lower court judge. Now, Heller, the Heller case back from 2008 that basically secured your right to keep and bear arms in your home suggested long-standing prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill are constitutional. But in another case, Barrett claimed that this rule should be shrunk. And here's where you have insight into where Amy Coney Barrett stands on firearms. Because remember Heller. Heller said, all right, now, you know, you got this right, but if you're talking about applying this case to other areas of Second Amendment law, you better mind your P's and Q's. For example, possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill, those things are okay, they suggested in Heller. Now, Barrett, in this other case that was looking at Heller and applying it to this, you know, mentally ill folks, she had a dissenting opinion. She said that the rule should be shrunk so that only dangerous people should be prohibited from owning a gun. So, therefore, a person connected with convicted of a nonviolent felony like mail fraud should still keep their Second Amendment right to own guns. So, clearly, she has a predisposition for the Second Amendment. So, teeing this case up and recognizing how unbelievably onerous New York gun laws. You have to go to a government official and prove to them. The burden of proof is on your side. It's like the presumption of innocence. If you're going in for a firearm and you don't have any black mark on your record, you're not deemed mentally ill or incapable, you don't have a restraining order out for you, then it should be presumed that you're allowed to get a firearm, and the state should have the burden to tell you that your Second Amendment right, your unabridged Second Amendment right, doesn't exist. So this one's got legs. I think this is going to go the way of gun ownership. And can you imagine all the laws that will be thrown out as a consequence of a decision in favor of the plaintiffs in this particular case? 617, 55 KRC, the talk station. Executive Transport. Six 55 KRC Talk Station. Coming up in the next segment, Vice Mayor Christopher Smitherman. Get his thoughts and comments about how he foresees the future with the new council ultimately being sworn in sometime in November after everybody makes the decision. We're going to have a bigger decision to make, actually, as to who's going to be mayor here in the primary. You're going to have a couple of choices that will be on the ballot in November, but you got to narrow it down from 6 to 2. So we'll see if he has any preferences onto the folks that are running. I presume it'll be David Mann. That's who, at least... Alex Trantafilo, no endorsement by the Hamilton County Republican Party, by the way, but last week he said, you know, of all the candidates, I think we'd be best having best served with David Mann, and I couldn't agree with him more completely, in spite of the fact that David Mann and I obviously are on different political sides of the ledger. But at least he's a diplomat. He's a gentleman. I think he will be good at managing the issues that face the city of Cincinnati faces. He's had the job before. He at least knows what it entails. So your choice will be made soon. We'll talk issues 1, 2, and 3 with Vice Mayor as well. Back over to guns. You'll get a kick out of this one. At least I did. Wyoming Roofing Company. Not our Wyoming. This is the state of Wyoming, all right? It would be funny if it was the community of Wyoming here in the greater Cincinnati area, because it would be so far from reality for them, because I understand Wyoming to be a rather... Joe, do you sort of say Wyoming is a left-leaning community here locally? Yeah. Anyway, Wyoming Roofing Company in Wyoming, the state, Wiggins Construction... is offering customers a free AR-15 rifle with every purchase of a roof installation. I should call Ray Matre and see if this is something he's going to do. I doubt it. Anyway, apparently Wyoming has one of the least restrictive firearm laws in the country. You don't need a state permit to purchase or transfer a rifle, shotgun, or handgun. This promotion launched earlier in the month. Started after the company's marketing and customer relations director, Matt Thomas, asked the owner about giving customers a free AR-15 instead of a thank you card. They consulted with their lawyer and said, well, that adheres to federal laws. Go ahead, do your promotion. So, in order to qualify, you got to prove you're 21 years of age, haven't been convicted felon, and acknowledge that you will abide by state and federal gun laws. They log the gun's serial number over at Wiggins Construction Company and submit the transfer ownership form. The gun then belongs to the customer. Apparently, since the promotion began, Wiggins Construction has received over 120 bids from customers across the state interested in having them install their roof. According to the marketing guy over there, the average price for the installation ranges between $7,000 and $25,000 for a home, depending upon the size of materials. Of course, the AR-15s cost the company about $599 a piece. Obviously, there are critics. I imagine Kamala Harris is probably a critic. Guess what? Kamala Harris, as I mentioned last hour, coming to the city of Cincinnati on Friday, not the border, and... as of right now, no one knows why Kamala Harris is coming to Cincinnati, except for the people that she's already promised that she will visit. Perhaps a fundraiser? I don't know. But she thinks that we should not have what she calls assault weapons. We call modern sport rifles. On Sunday, on CNN's State of the Union called lawmakers to pass the so-called assault weapons ban. She said, so more broadly, this is Dana Bash. There have been at least 50 mass shootings in America in a little over a month. Your administration has made clear that infrastructure is the next big legislative priority. Why not guns? Anthony Fauci told me over the weekend that gun violence is a public health emergency. Harris? Well, I would disagree. We actually, as an administration, have taken action. The president issues executive orders, for example, on ghost guns. And there's been only so much, however, that a president can do through executive action. There's only so much we can do. We need Congress. Well, at least she understands the Constitution. 626, Vice Mayor Smitherman understands city council. He'll be on next to talk about it, among other things. And I can... It is 6:31 at 55 Karen City Talk Station. Normally, this is time for local stories. So rather than dive into local stories, let's dive into local politicians and talk to Vice Mayor Christopher Smitherman, who's returned to the 55 Karen City Morning Show. Always welcome addition to the program, Vice Mayor Smitherman. I hope you and your family are well. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Brian. Glad to be with you.
Always a pleasure. And we're going to have Sharon Coolidge on the program later to talk about this, but I don't know if you saw the headline in the Cincinnati Inquirer from the other day. In Cincinnati, turmoil and term limits will bring unprecedented change to City Hall. Before we dive into the issues 1, 2, and 3, I just want to get your impression on the mayor's race. We got 6 candidates, and I am really, really, really concerned for the city of Cincinnati, most notably that one of these unknown folks who has never even, and I know we love our inexperienced folks and our business leaders running as politicians because they're not wed to any interest groups and all that kind of stuff, but running a city is not an easy thing, and I think it does require some measure of experience, and several of the candidates have absolutely none. Do you have a favorite, Christopher, or what's your thoughts on the mayoral race as we approach fast approach the primary?
So I do have a favorite. I've endorsed David Mann. He's the chair of budget and finance, former mayor of the city of Cincinnati, former congressional member, former military veteran, married to Betsy Mann, a wonderful couple that would represent the city of Cincinnati incredibly well. The city has approximately a $1.4 billion budget. We have a very serious pension issue every year that we need to resolve. We have very serious operational issues. We have debt issues. We have a streetcar. We have MSD between the county and the city. We have waterworks. We do not want someone elected who doesn't know how to run a city. Okay, so those people who are running for mayor who have no experience should have run for city council. I feel very strongly that David Mann, in the selection that we have, is absolutely the strongest candidate. No issues surrounding corruption, very high ethics. He finds his way to this radio station.
Oh, yeah.
He's been able to answer your questions even when Brian Thomas disagreed with him.
Absolutely.
That's the kind of person that we want to put in the chair. And so people who are incredibly ambitious, people who continue to run for offices, they get an office, they run for another office. They're always trying to use the office to get to somewhere else. I just don't think that's what Cincinnati needs after 4 members of council being indicted.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the time for a steady hand. And the hope right now is 2 things. Easy for the inside Democrats who are pushing other candidates. Number one, they want to use ageism. Always interested how Democrats talk about all of the isms and then get to a race and start using ageism.
Uh-huh.
So there's an inside baseball game that the other candidates are using, particularly the ones who think they're going to win, is ageism.
Because David Mann is too old. We can't elect someone who's that old. Who did they just run and successfully win? President of the United States of America, Christopher Smitherman. The guy isn't exactly a spring chicken.
President Biden
exactly.
Is almost 80 years of age. And I would say that David Mann, his mom lived to be over 100, I believe, But this is a man who parks his car at City Hall every day and walks to his law practice and walks back. I would say he has more energy than I have.
Well, David,
someone who's always involved, always moving, always exercising. No one has ever down at City Hall said, David Mann is an old guy.
Right.
I mean, that's just not how he's presented until he decided that he wanted to run for mayor. And now the local Democrats are using ageism as a weapon against him. And I'm encouraging voters to reject that.
Well,
this is about ideas.
As he can demonstrate, as you pointed out, he comes on this program. I've heard him speak before. David Mann can dance intellectual and linguistic circles around the president of the free world. So I don't think his age has anything to do with it. It's really their love affair with Aftab Perival, one of the people you were alluding to earlier that seemed to be only after a job because it's going to represent some stepping stone to something in the future. And we all know darn well that Aftab Perival has got his eyes on national office, whether he wants to be a representative or a senator. That's all he seems to be after.
And Cincinnati, I just want to share with voters, is not a stepping stone. We need an operational person to run the city with a steady hand. And David Mann is that person. I mean in the primary, and I also mean in the general.
Yes, sir.
So, I mean both races, in the primary and in the general, we need. And so what's also interesting is the same group of people that are coming after David, they say, here's the other talking point they put out. They say, he walked out of a meeting. Let me deal with this. Let me deal with this for the public. This was a meeting at the convention center that most people don't even know what you and I are talking about or what I'm talking about right now, where David Mann was the chair of a meeting where citizens came there. Not only were they yelling, not only were they throwing things at the dais, they were also surrounding people who had a different opinion than they had, and they were verbally and almost physically attacking them, which means we had to bring the police over in the convention center in order to protect people for their First Amendment rights.
Unbelievable.
I want to suggest to you that David Mann, a person who was a former mayor, congressional member, looked at this meeting and said, this meeting is out of control, okay? Now, the people who stayed, I want to share this with the public, the super majority of them have all been indicted. Go look at the dais. So when David Mann walked out of the meeting, the only people standing predominantly, right, is maybe one person, because everybody else has been indicted by the FBI.
That's amazing when you put it that way, Christopher. It really is. Let's pause because we're a little out of time. We're going to come back. We're going to hear Christopher's thoughts and comments about issues 1, 2, and 3. KRCD Talk Station. Happy Tuesday. Brian Thomas here. Always happy when he's talking to Vice Mayor Christopher Smitherman, the voice of reason, and a person who's going to give us some insight into 1, 2, and 3, issues 1, 2, and 3. They're on the primary. And Christopher, Joe Strecker just told me that someone had posted on the 55KRC Facebook page the other day that they had no idea what issue 3 was. And so, my God, how long have we been talking about this? And listen, if you're out of the county or you're in another state, yeah, okay, I understand. But, wow, this... You better darn well know, especially if you're voting in the primary, and please do vote. Issue 3 is going to be devastating. Christopher.
Issue 3 is a proposal put forth, which I respect, a charter amendment for our Constitution in the city that says that we are required in perpetuity to place $50 million and direct it to an 11-member board, not elected, 2 appointees by the president pro tem, so they cut out the mayor.
Yeah.
The president pro tem, which is organized by council. Council selects who the president pro tem is. So in this case, council member Seelbach is the president pro tem. And that is organized by council. So they're basically saying, we don't want the mayor or the city manager, the professional people who run the city, to be involved with $50 million of your tax dollars. and how those dollars are spent. I'm sharing with you with a $441 million operating budget. This will devastate city workers. City workers that live in this city who are listening to this voice. This is not an exaggeration. Do not listen to the other side. Your jobs are on the line. So if you work in public services, if you work in waterworks, if you work in MSD and live in the city, if you're a person that works in the police department, you work in the fire department, this is your issue. We do not have $50 million. That doesn't mean that you and I and others are against affordable housing. I support affordable housing. They're trying to box people like me and you and others who are listening to make us act like we're not for affordable housing. And their talking point is that the city of Cincinnati is doing nothing, which is also untrue. And so this is actually an attempt, right, to redirect $50 million of our budget with no oversight from an elected official.
Yeah, that's
it is incredibly reckless.
You know, Christopher,
something that I say vote absolutely no on issue three.
And I'll echo that all day long. And apparently everyone of all political stripes agrees, with the exception of those people who are going to be getting the money, apparently. And that's a concern. But you talk about the president pro tem having control over a portion of this unelected board. Christopher, the backdrop to some of your comments in the last segment were all of the corruption that's going on with four members of council under either one prior conviction or three under indictment. Don't you think that puts Chris Seelbach in a potentially dangerous position, given the power that he wields with regard to $50 million and how it's expended?
I would say the absolutely yes. And I think it's anybody who has served as the president pro tem, because what they're basically saying here is we do not want the administration or the mayor to be involved. And there are people out there that go, I think that's great. That's not great when you're talking about $50 million every 10 years, spending $500 million with no oversight.
That's crazy.
It is ripe for corruption. I also want to say that there's an active campaign out here, Brian, and this is something that you really impact in a big way, meaning in a positive way. There's a talking campaign out there to keep independents, moderate Democrats, liberal Republicans, and conservative Republicans home, because what they want to try to make people feel like independents, is the primary doesn't really matter. Just stay home. And so what I want to suggest is, when you're talking about 10% of the electorate, the 10% of those who are registered to vote showing up to vote, if 3,000 or 4,000 extra people who are listening to this show, the tens of thousands that are listening, but I'm saying 3,000 or 4,000 that are listening, say, you know what, I'm going to get up off my sofa and I'm going to make sure that I participate in this election, and I'm going to vote yes on one, yes on two, no on three, and yes for David Mann. David Mann would win the primary, because just 3,000 or 4,000 people will just totally upset the apple cart. And no will fail. And the power of that is that independents, moderate Democrats, liberal Republicans, and conservative Republicans sometimes don't understand that their votes are the most powerful in the primary.
That's an excellent point.
We can actually decide who is playing in the Super Bowl by controlling the playoffs.
This is it, man.
We should be on the team.
Amen. And as I pointed out last week, and we'll pause and we'll talk one and two, we come back and talk about corruption. But this is an opportunity for the citizens of the city of Cincinnati to have some control over the priority list. And I don't think most of the city of Cincinnati really fully appreciates how lower level this should be as a priority compared to all the other things that you know are going to be impacted. Roads construction and pothole fixing and infrastructure and police and fire, garbage pickup, central basic core services that people just take for granted are going to go away to some degree. So pause for a moment. We'll continue on issues one and two with Vice Mayor Smitherman after I mentioned Loan One Mortgage, because, of course, if we'll be right back. 652, 55 Care CD Talk Station. Next hour, continuing a theme with Sharon Coolidge of the Cincinnati Inquirer, talking about the turmoil and term limits with the unprecedented change that's going to be coming to Cincinnati City Hall after the November elections. Of course, Christopher Smitherman, Vice Mayor, is on the phone talking about the primary, which is very important. As he pointed out, everyone who otherwise thinks their vote doesn't matter, please vote in the primary so we can make sure at least issue three is shot down in flames, and that will provide flexibility to members of all political stripes. But also issues one and two are important and brought about because of corruption. Vice Mayor Smith, I mean, you're responsible for one of the issues.
Issue one is one that I brought forth that deals with allowing a special prosecutor to be appointed like we would have now, but we don't in the current indictment, and also not allowing members of council to change their designee once they're indicted. Very practical, very common sense. Number two is Councilmember Sunderman, issue two, and that deals with the ability for council to organize itself and seven members actually take action without any other body for removal or suspension of council. Also deals with council having to take ethics training, which is very important by the charter. You're elected, you have to go do ethics training. So issues one and two dig down and get at the issues of corruption, and they are baby steps, but important for both of them. And I also want to say the ageism thing about David Mann again. You know, I don't mind letting your listening audience know that I have an AARP card. Now, most of the people that show up and vote are most likely between the ages of 40, right, and probably 100, right? Yeah. And so this campaign around ageism, when people are going to the polls, whether they're a Democrat or independent or Republican, first of all, this is about top of mind. This is about corruption. This is about a self-awareness that we all should have about turning City Hall around by putting the right people in place, no matter their political party or affiliation. It certainly is not about age. But I want people to think when they're voting, if they're walking in there with an AARP card, think about the people that are saying you're irrelevant and that you have no place to lead. I'm saying I'm carrying my AARP card in, and I've already voted for David Mann. And so this notion that age is now playing in this race but didn't play in the race for Biden from Democrats, as you've indicated, is absolute hypocrisy.
Yeah.
This is really a local campaign attempting to use age as a weapon. If it were about race, if it were about sex, if it were about gender, we all would be up in arms. Now they're trying to weaponize age when it is convenient. I'm voting for David Mann. I'm voting yes on issue one, yes on issue two, and no on issue three.
And no hesitation on any of those. Vice Mayor Smithen, you made that very clear, and I'll encourage people to follow your lead and do exactly the same thing. You're always welcome on the program. Stay well until we get to talk again, Vice Mayor Smitherman, and best of health to you and your family as well.
Thank you, sir.
655, 55 KRC, the talk station. Phone calls are welcome. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on AT&T phones. We're going to continue our discussion at 740 with Sharon Coolidge, rather, from the Cincinnati Inquirer about what is going to happen in November. You better be prepared and start thinking about it now and get and vote in the primary. Got more coming up as well. Be right back after the news.
Make a stand with your voice.
I mean, it's seditious what they're doing.
55 KRC, the talk station.
It's 7:06 at 55 KRC Talk Station. Gorgeous morning out there. My name is Brian Thomas. I appreciate Gary Jeff Walker covering for me yesterday when I took my extra day for a three-day weekend. Little mental health sleep in. It was awesome. Yes, staring at the back of my eyelids at up until like 8:30 in the morning. It's just glorious. I love being able to, you know, roll over and, you know, I'd stare at the alarm clock, and you know, you can only stare at that for so long during the week. You've got to get out of bed. So yeah, 3 o'clock feels like getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So got a good night's rest, and I appreciate Gary Jeff allowing me to do that. And of course, Joe Strecker is back. He was back yesterday after his 3-day weekend. Over to the phones we go. I got a lot to talk about, and I guess we, of course, Sharon Coolidge is going to take one of those topics coming up at 7:40. Sharon Coolidge from the Enquirer about the craziness that is the city of Cincinnati elections going on. Just heard from Vice Mayor Smitherman. If you're just tuning in, let me sum up. Very, very, very important for everyone to vote. If you are an independent, a sort of a rational, sane Democrat, as opposed to one of these, you know, communists that have taken over the Democrat Party, if you're a libertarian, if you're a conservative Republican, if you are a liberal-leaning Republican, go vote. He said he figures if an extra 4,000 people from those groups show up and vote no on issue 3, which is the most important vote to cast in the primary other than or equal to the mayor, and I agree with Vice Mayor Smitherman, David Mann is the guy who should be the mayor. It's not an endorsement of his politics. It's an endorsement of the man who we need as mayor compared to the other group. I mean, if you just look, knock them down one by one, some have zero experience, and you can't run a city without any experience whatsoever. Look, run for council for a while and do that job and then run for mayor. And you can say that about Cecil Thomas, but insofar as diplomacy is concerned and what the city needs in terms of a true gentleman, if I may be so bold, since he's a guy, David Mann. No on 3, David Mann. That would be it. If that's all you do on primary day, then I think Vice Mayor Smith would be happy, but he'd also like a yes on issues 1 and 2. Over to the phones we go, 749-5500-800-823-TALK. We're going to, like I said, Sharon Coolidge, I think, is going to dive into the balance of the election. What is it going to look like after November? Because of term limits and everything? First, let's see what Rose has got this morning. Hey, Rose, welcome to the show, and happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. I called to endorse what the great Vice Mayor Smitherman said this morning. I would add that this is the most critical primary or election ever for the city of Cincinnati.
Yeah.
In the sense that issue 3 would totally bankrupt the city and defund our essential services in order to meet that idiotic charter amendment. And it's not easy to take it back or change it. It's a charter amendment. Now, one of the idiots that are running for mayor says that, oh, I'm for it. It's not perfect, but I'll change it when I become mayor. He's an idiot. It can't happen.
Right.
You got to change it by charter, by another
petition.
Election.
Right. You have to circulate a petition, get enough signatures to get it on a ballot, and then win to have the thing repealed. That is not the direction you want to have to go. You're right on that one, Rose.
Correct. And 1 and 2 are almost, if not equally important as for the future of the city of Cincinnati. We must make sure that integrity comes back to the city, to the council.
Well, and to that end, Rose, and I don't know if you've looked at the candidates that are running for council. There are so many of them; it's almost like you need some big long, a scorecard with all the information and the summaries of each candidate's position. But I don't think anybody's bothered compiling any. Do you? I mean, seriously, Rose, of all the people running for council. Could you and I really sum up what any single one of them, where they are on the issues?
A couple, maybe. David Mann. And I say, amen, vote for David Mann. He's a man of integrity. At least that much.
I share your conclusion, Rose.
So, and I'm saying vote yes on issues 1 and 2. And a big N-O for issue 3. And we have to, the electorate has to see this primary just as important, if not more, for that we be there and we vote our ballot. Cast our ballot.
We know where you're coming from, Rose, and I share your conclusion. Take care and stay well, my dear. It's good hearing from you. Miss you at listener lunches, which we'll have to start doing again at some point here soon, hopefully. Yeah, and you know, she brought up another point. We got to double down on that. You can think this is a great idea. Issue 3, $50 million to deal with affordable housing. Look at what it is going to happen with the money. First off, it's going to go to this unelected group. You have no accountability. Think of how potentially corrupting that alone is. I mean, I think Strecker and I are going to start a not-for-profit homeless advocacy group if this passes, just because there's going to be so many hands want to reach in the cookie jar and grab some of this money. Oh, we're a not-for-profit organization. Yeah, well, you know what? Our not-for-profit's going to pay Strecker $150,000 a year to be the director of the Affordable Housing Coalition that we're going to form. And don't think, I mean, you say, oh, Thomas, no, but that's true. Have you heard anybody suggest what exactly they're going to do with the money to solve the problem? There have been a multitude of coalitions to deal with homelessness and advocacy and affordable housing over the years, and all of them are looking for money. Well, here's your pile of money. What are you going to do with it? Ah, well, hell with you, man. We don't have to tell you what you're going to do with it. You just got to give us the money because we're all about affordable housing. Who could be against affordable housing? So there's that aspect, but the other component is, and you are heading into a fiscal train wreck, and this is something that no one can address, especially the folks who are pro-issue 3. Ask them, stare them in the face and say, wait a second, do you have any idea how much money the city's going to bring in next year in terms of the tax, the revenue tax? I mean, we're talking about a changed reality for the city of Cincinnati. The office workers are not going to return in the numbers previously shown in terms of where they work. We all know a lot of people are commuting, well, to their basement to finish out their workday. They're not living in the city of Cincinnati. Therefore, they will not be taxed with an earnings tax anymore. It's two-thirds of the total revenue. All the revenue piled up, two-thirds of it comes from the earnings tax. And earnings tax is comprised of 80% of people who don't live and work in this or live in the city of Cincinnati. So ask them, say, fine, okay, let's just say your idea is a glorious one, and this is the greatest idea since sliced bread. $50 million every year to go toward affordable housing, and we all have the ideas and the answers to your questions, Thomas, about where it's going to be spent, and it's going to work. How much money is that going to be percentage-wise out of the total, what Christopher said, $415 million annual budget? It's not going to be that much this year. It's going to be less. And you know what? Currently, there are lawsuits that have been challenging the idea that a municipality can continue to take money out of your paycheck when you don't work in the municipality anymore. And I think those chickens are going to come home to roost in the sense that there's going to be some court opinion that says, nope, as of the effective date, any worker was not working in the city. You must refund any earnings tax you took from them. State law be damned. Can the city afford to cut those checks? Not in the face of $50 million being taken out of the general fund up front. And, oh, yeah, then there's garbage collection and fire department and center for closing the health gap and all these other areas that are going to be cut. So regardless of whether you're a communist, a Democrat, a socialist, a libertarian, a Green Party candidate, a Republican of any stripe, everybody produces garbage. And when you go from 1 week pickup to every 2 week pickup, you're going to notice, yeah, things are going to get kind of gamey as we approach the end of the second week cycle. And that impacts everybody. It's a visual thing. It's like the broken windows in the neighborhood. If you fix that kind of thing, the neighborhood tends to turn around because it appears as though people care about it. When you take garbage collection and reduce it down to every 2 weeks, or maybe even less, because you were foolish enough to take $50 million off the top for anything from the budget, you no longer have the flexibility that you need to run a city effectively. It is going to be devastating if issue 3 passes. Looks like Rob's on the phone. Rob, we'll take your call right out of the gate. I got to mention right now, though, Bud Herbert Motors, because I don't want anybody to go out to a box. It's 7:21 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station. Happy Tuesday. Phone number here if you'd like to call, 749-5500, alternatively 800-823-TALK. And then finally, you can call Prista pound 550 if you have an AT&T phone. Great to the straight to the phones. We're going to go. I promise, Rob, he'd be next, and he is. I just real quick want to mention that Kamala Harris is coming to town on Friday. The Inquirer reporting this, but we don't have any reason why. And so Joe and I were talking to the break because we're expecting her at some point because it's her job since Joe Biden gave it to her to deal with the border crisis. Yeah, she's hard at work doing diplomacy on that one. Yeah, whatever. But Joe thought maybe she would use this as an argument, her trip to Cincinnati, as an argument that she is visiting the border. And she'll stand in front of the Brent Spence Bridge and she'll try to sell the Joe Biden $2 trillion infrastructure plan while standing on the border of Ohio and Kentucky. That making her like the 97th candidate to stand in front of the Brent Spence Bridge and promise that something will be done to solve the problem. That's my speculation anyway. Rob Ryder, welcome to the program and a very happy Tuesday to you, sir.
Same to you. I give you one morning off, you come back like an absolute madman. You're fired up today.
Yeah, I was pretty fired up this morning. I have been kind of fired up this morning. It's just the world's a crazy place, Rob. That's what more can I say? I mean, this issue 3 thing can really just sum it up quite nicely. You know, enough people to sign up. You can get anybody to sign a ballot initiative. Heck, they've circulated petitions seeking to ban hydrogen, a dioxide or something, H2O, water.
Right.
And you can get enough people to sign something to ban it. We need affordable housing. Yeah, you're right. That sounds like a good idea. So that's as far as you get on the petition. You get enough people to sign it. Next thing you know, you have a colossal Charlie Foxtrot on your hands.
It's really crazy, but I was thinking about your interview with Peter Bronson a couple of weeks back about the book and how corruption was so pervasive in Northern Kentucky
yeah.
and how that it was the training ground for Las Vegas and the mob. And so why would there not be corruption right across the river here in Cincinnati? You know, it's almost like it was born here.
Boss Cox. Wasn't it Boss Cox back in the 1900s ran the city? Was the mob boss kind of guy?
Oh yeah, maybe we're pikers here with the corruption that's going on, but it certainly is interesting that you look at affordable housing and then look at the gentrification of over the Rhine.
I know,
and there are those who are living there who have moved in there. I've got family members actually who are in over the Rhine, and I said, well, what happens to the people who are displaced, who are being displaced? He said, nobody did anything about it for the last 20 years.
Exactly,
so we're fixing it up.
It's interesting. Perfect illustration, Rob, and I'm glad you brought OTR up because let's face it, if it wasn't for the gentrification of OTR, you wouldn't have the streetcar. They started out with Washington Park, which I think was a good investment of resources because that place used to be just a haven for drug addicts.
Yes,
but now it's a very welcoming place, and I think that did more to rehabilitate over the Rhine than anything else. But look at the millions of dollars they put into it. Re-gentrifying it, making it a more desirable place, wanting real estate prices to do what, Rob? When you do that, real estate prices go up because there's actually a greater demand to live there. This was a concerted effort by many administrations year after year after year to polish and make Over the Rhine a better place, a more welcoming place, and to get a bunch of urban hipsters to move there. Congratulations, Agenda 21, you've achieved it. But in the process, you pissed off a lot of people who used to be able to afford to live there, and now this problem is on our hands.
It's like a snowball, like the last snow we had a couple of days ago. So anyway,
well, every action has some sort of equal and potentially opposite reaction. They just didn't care about affordable housing until now. So, Rob, always good to hear from you, my friend.
Appreciate it, partner.
Stay well. 7:25 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. Rush Limbaugh Morning Update. Of course, the late, the great. Please. It is 7:30 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station. Hope you're having a happy Tuesday. Stick around. Next segment, Sharon Coolidge, when the realities come into Cincinnati City Hall Council election. Of course, a new mayor we're going to have in November and a critical, critical, critical primary coming, fast approaching May 5th. So make sure you get out and vote for all the reasons we talked about earlier. If you didn't get a chance to listen, Vice Mayor Christopher Smithman, 1 hour ago, he started and we did a few segments with him Please listen to what he has to say. He is a voice of reason, and he chimed in on his mayoral choice, David Mann, for a multitude of reasons. And, of course, the issues we've been talking about, yes on one, yes on two, and a definite underscore, exclamation, bold, no on three. Anyway, in other local stories, transgender people in Ohio are now able to change their gender on their birth certificates. Okay. Ohio Department of Health said it will not appeal a December court decision requiring them to request or accept requests, rather, from transgender people to reflect a gender different from the one they were, born with. I love this. Different from the one assigned at birth. Now, I think they just take a quick look. Look, twig berries. We're going to say that's a man. Anyhow, according to the Thursday court filing, department working on a process for people to request the change and expects to have it in place by June 1st. Agency is also updating its communications on the issue to reflect compliance with the court's December 16th, 2020 order, that according to the filing. So, there you go. We'll just put that over there and let you decide whether that's progress or not. Downtown bar owner has demanded that Hamilton County Auditor Dusty Rhodes resign. Something tells me Dusty's going to say no to this. Anyway, it's described as a feud between two, and they are outspoken people about politics. Dusty Rhodes, of course, very outspoken, and questions of whether Dusty can, well, boot people off of Twitter. So Dusty Rhodes, he's been auditor since 1990. Of course, anybody who knows Dusty knows, he's not really a Democrat. He just calls himself one, at least in terms of his political philosophy as gauged by modern standards. Kennedy was a Democrat also. And if you read what Kennedy pushed in the legislation he advocated for and the way in which he advocated for it, if you take his name away from it, you could put any conservative in front of it, and that's how conservative it would sound. But the world's changed. Dusty hasn't. Anyway, you have on the other side of this argument back and forth a woman named Lindsay Swadner, who is a self-described, I guess, artist, but also a bar owner of the Hub OTR on Main Street. They have had bitter exchanges previously, but now a lawyer is apparently involved. Thanks, Scott Wortman, for letting us know about this from the Enquirer. All came to a head in March when Rhodes blocked Ms. Swander on Twitter when she tweets from her bar's account. Rhodes told the Enquirer that he blocks people that use profanity. When they asked to be unblocked, he said he unblocks them. Swander noticed Rhodes blocked her on March 26. She had just tweeted questions about Rhodes asking if he was running for the worst person in Hamilton County. She claimed that was in response to a tweet that he sent out about recent mass shootings in Georgia. Rhodes described as often taking a confrontational style online, criticizing both Democrats and liberals. Okay. So, why should Rhodes resign? He asked rhetorically, tweeting private business on taxpayers' dime, Swander and her lawyer claim. She had this to say. He is still using his time as county auditor during office hours to retweet Tucker Carlson and make other questionable and concerning statements. Rhodes, responding to the Enquirer's questions, said, if I do occasionally tweet from my office and they don't like it, that's too damn bad. It's just another effort from one of the woke crowd to shut me up. She's not going to be successful. And that's, of course, exactly what I would expect coming out of Dusty Rhodes' mouth. Let's go to the phones. We can take one more before we hear from Sharon Coolidge on, well, what will Cincinnati look like after November? Hey, Gary, welcome to the show. Happy Tuesday to you.
Hey, same to you, Brian. I just had a couple observations. Obviously, I'm just an onlooker. I'm over here in Kentucky looking in. But I watch the news quite frequently about the politics in Cincinnati because I was born and raised there. My question is, on this affordable housing, $50 million a year to defund the police and the fire,
yeah,
who's going to oversee the money and who's going to oversee there's no foreign accounts, offshore accounts, people blowing this money on homes, cars, vacations, travel. I mean, who's going to be in charge of that to make sure that doesn't happen?
That's one of the giant elephants in the room on this, Gary. We don't know. It's an unelected, unaccountable group of folks who are going to decide where this money goes. And you talk, think about it. In the context of the Gang of Five, Gary, they got in trouble, right? Because they worked behind the scenes and colluded behind the scenes to get what they wanted accomplished. We have four members of council under indictment related to shenanigans, trying to pad their accounts in return for favors for, well, FBI agents, but who are purporting to be business developers. Now, take out business developers and put not-for-profit homeless and affordable housing advocacy groups. You don't think that just maybe that some might just decide, as you indicated, to misspend the money and go out and buy real estate or maybe give themselves a huge salary on an annual basis, even though they're a not-for-profit? Not-for-profit doesn't mean the board of directors on those are going to make, you know, like 10 cents an hour or something. There's been not-for-profits whose boards of directors make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. So that's money that's not going to go to solve the affordable housing crisis, although it will help those advocacy groups who are going to get a chunk of that money and who do make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. It'll help them with any housing crisis they may personally have. Gary, good to hear from you, man. You take care of yourself. Thanks very much for the call. Coming up, Sharon Coolidge, Cincinnati Inquirer. Talk about, well, a lot about this and more. USA Insulation, though, to the rescue, and it's still just $99 a month interest-free. Be one of the more than 90,000 homeowners who have done the right thing and, well, pulled the trigger on the no-brainer that is insulating your home. USA Insulation's premium foam, the highest R value on the market. Made in Ohio. You're not going to find a higher R. It is. It's coming up fast on 740 at 55 KRC, the talk station. A very happy Tuesday to you. Happy to be back at work. Thanks again to Gary Jeff Walker for covering for me yesterday on my long weekend. And thanks again to Sharon Coolidge from the Cincinnati Inquirer for agreeing to join us on the 55 KRC Morning Show and stating the obvious, Sharon, in your headline. In Cincinnati, turmoil and term limits will bring unprecedented change to City Hall. I think change could be changed into chaos, but either way you look at it, this is a pivotal election. I mean, we have not just the primary, and we've been talking all morning. I had Vice Mayor Smitherman on to talk about issues 1 through 3, the mayoral race. We've got the primary to determine who the candidates are going to be running for mayor in November. And, of course, how many people running for Cincinnati City Council, Sharon? And welcome back.
Good morning. You know, I was thinking about writing this story, you know, closer to the council race, because that's where the most change is going to occur.
Right.
All of these candidates running, these dozens and dozens of people vying for these 9 seats. But the truth of the matter is people really needed this kind of information to make an informed decision going into Tuesday's primary election for mayor. It's not news that we're going to select a new mayor, right? There's term limits for mayor. And, you know, we've been in this position before with mayor. But I think people need to have all of the information, like, who do you want to vote for mayor, knowing about council and all of the changes coming there, too. So it's like, let's put it all out there right now for informed decisions.
Amen. And I'm glad you did that. And that's exactly what Vice Mayor Smitherman and I were talking about. Now, he is a very strong David Mann supporter. And in spite of our political differences, David Mann and I've had him on this program many times. He's a gentleman. He is willing to discuss issues. He's willing to engage in a thoughtful discussion where we do disagree. I think he's the diplomat that we're probably going to need in the event we ended up with some, I don't know, I can imagine some radicals getting elected council this year since there's so many folks that are running.
I do think that we're, you know, the city seems to be skewing a little bit more liberal.
Just a skosh.
This coming time. And, you know, I'll be writing a lot more about, you know, the endorsements, not only for the Democratic Party, that powerhouse endorsement of those 9, but really, you know, who the Republicans are, you know, going to put on their a much smaller slate, I'm expecting, the Charter Committee to really, and you know, I'm talking with my boss now, too, to write about people who didn't garner these endorsements. I mean, the charter is out, but we're still, you know, we're coming upon a time when we're going to start hearing about the rest of the endorsements to make sure that voters really kind of have a good handle on everyone who's running so they can make their own choices.
Well, making their own choices, but will they be informed decisions? And that's where we need you, Sharon, and the Enquirer and other local reporters, because, you know, as I mentioned earlier in the program, we may be able to figure out by the 5th in the primary where the 6 mayoral candidates are on the issues, but there's not a whole lot of information out there about that. We know where they are on issue 3. A couple of them, or at least 3 of them, I think, are in favor of it. So that, to me, automatically disqualifies them, because that suggests to me they don't understand the level of flexibility they're going to need to budget. Beyond that, it's sort of a mystery, except Aftab Perival seeming to run for almost every office that comes available.
You know, I've been this week calling it the quiet election, just because I think nobody's willing to engage in, like, I really feel this way, and this person, except on issue 3, and this person, you know, doesn't feel that way. And really, with this whole, you know, where they stand on the issues, Chris Wederick over at the Business Courier did, you know, tackle that streetcar question yesterday.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's any surprise that people, you know, there wasn't this anti-streetcar sentiment from them. But we just haven't seen a willingness to these definitive answers on issues. I mean, there's been a million forums. The Enquirer had one on last Thursday, and I just didn't really hear a lot of hard answers of, like, I stand here on this, I stand here on that. We keep defaulting to a lot of talking points.
Well, a lot of talking points, and I think part of the mystery that shrouds all this is no one has a handle on the budget. I mean, no one can have a handle on the budget because we have an earnings tax problem on our hands. Now, the lawyer in me I keep saying out loud, and I am convinced that I'm right on this. I don't care what the Ohio State legislature did. At some point, someone is going to win the lawsuit which says, city, you can't take taxes out of my salary when I'm not working there. There is no argument to be made where that would be lawful. There's not even an equity argument that could be made there. You're not working in the city. There's no right any municipality has to tax you. That's like saying the state of Illinois can start levying taxes on Ohioans. You'd be like, what? So,
wait, you mean as I sit in my guest room in Delhi?
Uh-huh, exactly. That's where I grew up, Sharon. You're sitting in a good place. So then there is the going forward reality. Regardless of how long the city could get away with legally taking taxes away from people who aren't working there anymore, you and I both know the dynamic is going to change. My wife's a great illustration. She used to work in Erlanger, and now she is permanently at home in Sims Township. No longer going to be paying Erlanger taxes with good reason. That's the reality for a lot of Cincinnati workers. And let me go back.
I have to tell you, Chris Bigham, the budget director and now assistant city manager, there is no budget discussion that he ever started without saying, you know, this is really, you know, it's too heavily based on earnings tax. It's like this, it leaves off this 1,000 page budget document every year.
It has to.
Like, and then everybody glosses right over it. And it's like, well, where are we going to spend the money?
Well, welcome to COVID-19 and now having to deal with that 800-pound elephant or gorilla that's been in the room now for years. Because, again, the sad reality of this, or say it's a great reality, whatever, 80% of the money that goes to the city of Cincinnati comes from the earnings tax. And where and what percentage of the earnings tax is made up of people who don't live in the city? 2/3. And you know a sizable chunk of those 2/3 are going to be living in their suburban homes and working from the office in their basement. So problems abound. And without someone who has a concept of budgeting and finances, and again, I don't want a newbie in the job. I think David Mann's the only answer to that. But again, none of them seem to be talking about budget.
I know, I agree with that. And, you know, I asked during the Enquirer's, you know, debate with all of these candidates, you know, if this affordable housing passes, what's the first thing you would do? Like, where are you going to get the money? Like, that could be, like, raising some sort of tax or taking it, making a cut. I did not get a hard answer out of that. And I do look and I say, what are the priorities? I know I'm the reporter and I'm supposed to have the answer to these. We're trying to get to that. And, of course, you know, I think a lot of people might have in mind their top 2 picks of where, like, the person they're going to vote for.
Yeah.
So we're going to get to these harder questions, I think, when it's narrowed to the 2.
Right, now, you were going to have a debate on issue three. Is that correct, Sharon? I understand you were going to be one of the moderators.
Thursday at 1 o'clock. You can tune in on Cincinnati.com or on the Inquirer Facebook page. We are doing this.
And I'm glad you are. And this will, again, Cincinnati.com, I was going to use your website anyway to promote people getting a subscription to the Inquirer, because without you guys, I keep pointing out, you know, we're going to lose out on, well, an opportunity to know what these people stand for. So the debate, 1 o'clock on Thursday, and you can stream it through Cincinnati.com?
This is, yes, that is a way to do that. It isn't a debate with the mayoral candidates, though, and how they feel on it, because they kind of have all put out. You can go to their websites and they talk about it. This is, you know, this is supporters of it and detractors, you know, these, you know, safety first group. And so the idea is to vet, do we need this or not, and give people some more information about that.
Well, all I can say is, you know, people get bogged down in this affordable housing. And once you get there, and if you're against any proposal to raise to affordable housing, well, I guess you're just some evil person who doesn't believe in affordability of housing. And that's certainly not the case. It's a question of whether this is the right way. Giving $50 million every year off the top, can't touch it, have to throw it at
or
this.
Or more.
Right. Adjusted for inflation. And it goes to a group of unelected people. Now, if you're worried about corruption in the city of Cincinnati, go ahead and start handing out $50 million piles of money to a group of unelected officials. That seems like a recipe for corruption, Sharon.
You know, we see that kind of board structure with, you know, the park board and the rec board. And so, you know, a lot of people are saying this unelected. But this is honestly, like, the parks are there and, like, kind of making decisions about that. Affordable housing and all the things that go into it, it does seem like something that you want to say, well, I elected this person, and then I
exactly.
That gets that level of accountability.
Exactly.
For the good and for the bad. Like, that's not to say, oh, well, in case you don't want it. Well, that's in case you do want it, because we're looking at a council now. I mean, think about this Elm and Liberty fight, and people are like, well, we want the affordable housing. Well, you know what? They didn't get it. And so that there's a level of accountability there on whether you want more affordable housing or you don't. You can look and be like, well, I'm not going to vote for this person.
Amen. And therein is the bottom line. At least with elected officials, you can vote them out or support them for reelection because they did the wrong or the right thing, as the case may be. Sharon Coolidge, of course, Cincinnati.com is where you go. Check out the debate on Thursday at 1. And, of course, read what the Inquirer writes every day. I appreciate you coming back on the program, Sharon. I hope you have a great week.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. 7:50 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Always a pleasure to mention Plum Tight Plumbing. It's always plumbing done right. Proudly serving Cincinnati, Kentucky, and Dayton. They've been doing it for decades. They have an eight.
What more can the federal government do for me?
55 KRC, the talk station.
Can I get more IRS involvement in my life?
Cincinnati's place to talk.
Coming up on 8:06 at 55 KRCD Talk Station. Happy Tuesday. Beautiful morning out there. Got to say that. Hope you had a great weekend. All day yesterday, it seemed like Sunday to me. Anyway, three-day weekend was awfully nice. I know Joe had one as well. He took last Friday off. But Joe Strecker and I, Brian Thomas, back together. And glad to be. Appreciate Joe lining up guests. If you didn't get to hear Vice Mayor Smitherman, it's important that you listen to what he had to say. Issues 1, 2, and 3. And I'd like to think you know about issues 1, 2, and 3, especially even those who aren't in the city of Cincinnati. It's like, I'm not gonna have to vote on those. Well, you should know, because you might be friends with or know people who live in the city and therefore have a right to vote. And it's going to be a problem. And, you know, one of the things that we didn't dwell on, but it's implicit, and it's been stated specifically based upon those dealing with budget issues, that the police will be defunded to some degree. Not completely, but they will have to cut officers and recruit classes. There will be fewer police officers on the street in the city of Cincinnati. And you know what that means? It's more crime. You've seen it across this great land of ours. And all these cities where they defunded police, the crime has escalated. It's gone through the roof. Who made national headlines for apologizing for the vandalism and the rioters in Portland, Oregon last year, saying that they were merely exercising their right to protest against an unjust America? Who was it who directed police not to use CS gas for crowd control in the face of protesters setting fire to cop cars, firebombing government buildings, and setting fire to the police union hall? Who was it who agreed to cut $27 million from the fiscal 21 budget for the police department? Who was it who said that an attack on our democracy? It was an attack on our democracy when Donald Trump sent agents in to defend federal property in Portland. Yes, you're talking about the governor, or rather the mayor of Portland, Oregon, Ted Wheeler. Ted Wheeler did all of those things and so much more, and now he has the nerve, the audacity to beg the public for their help in identifying Antifa terrorists and unmask them because they need to know who they are. So, of course, he can take his city back. I kid you not. He was standing out there on Friday asking for the city residents to assist the police in their efforts to unmask members of the self-described anarchist mob. They had to extend the state of emergency in Portland all the way through Monday. And it's funny as Mayor Ted Wheeler is standing up asking that the public help out, obviously because of the reduced law enforcement presence and the persistent presence of vandals in the form of Antifa. Within hours of his plea to the public for help, the police had to declare a riot in the northeast part of the city. Rioters started damaging buildings. To what end? I don't know. They don't want peace. They're obviously and clearly angry with this administration. Of course, it's their guy. He's a Democrat. This is what you get. He played their game for 9 months. He let them get away with it for 9 months, apologizing for their behavior, explaining it away. He was like a version of CNN standing there in front of a burning building saying nothing to see here. And now he's pleading desperately. He said, the city is beginning to recover, but self-described anarchists who engage in regular criminal destruction don't want things to open up to recover. They want to prevent us from doing the work of making a better Portland for everyone. They want to burn. They want to bash. Well, finally, I guess he understands the political ideology of anarchists. They want chaos. They don't want control. They want to live in a government-free society. They're anarchists. Not nihilists. At least they have an ethos. But this is their reality. Democrats aren't liberal enough for them. They want to bring society down to a screeching halt. I don't know what they hope to come after that. Because even anarchists, I think, occasionally like their cup of Starbucks coffee. That evil capitalist entity that is Starbucks. Even anarchists like their cell phones. They can communicate that way. They got the smartphones. Of course, they can pay that bill. Capitalism brought about the cell phones and, of course, continue to cost money because when you bring society down, you're not going to have a job. Therefore, you're not going to be earning an income and there's no one there to support the social welfare system in an anarchist environment. So, you know, anarchy brings about, you know, social chaos. You're not going to be able to steal from someone else's earnings, assuming there is a job for anyone left in their version of the world. You can't take from somebody else when somebody else doesn't have any money to take from. How is government going to continue to fund its activities, whether it's through wealth redistribution, through the social welfare system, or maybe American military? Pick a program that you think is appropriate from government, my anarchist friends, and just consider a world where that doesn't exist anymore because you got what you wanted. And this isn't a black-white thing because even black-owned businesses in Portland are pleading with the mayor and other authority figures to get their act together and stop the violence because no one's showing up to buy their goods and services. They're afraid. Welcome to the city of Cincinnati when you go ahead and throw $50 million out of a dwindling general fund to go directly to whatever affordable housing means in the hearts and minds of a bunch of unelected board members who are going to decide where the money is going to go in order to solve the problem of affordable housing, which to me is like the peace of God. I mean, even Jesus said, you know, the poor you will always have, right? and thus it has ever been. The Great Society program was supposed to end poverty as we know it in America. You know what's changed? Our view of what constitutes poverty. Trillions of dollars have been thrown at social welfare programs. And a lot of people, I mean, it's been written about a lot lately. And think about this in context. COVID-19 and the all the additional checks and balance and checks and money that people have been receiving. We currently have a huge unfulfilled opening for jobs in this country. There are tons of jobs ready, willing, and available for those who are willing to take them. But because of this added benefits, the extra $600 a week or the extra $1,400 stimulus check, hey, coupled with all the other social welfare benefits that are available for people under a certain income threshold, hey, why work? People eligible and qualified to fill jobs are refusing to work because, well, they're getting the umbilical cord of the government flowing into their pockets. And like, you know what? This minimalist existence isn't so bad. I can watch TV all day. I can play my video games. You know, I'm not interested in buying a great car or a big house. You know, I just live in a subsistence life. This is awesome. I'm not working. Forget about it. It breeds that. But you can't have any of that in an anarchy system. And just remember that what's going on in Portland and the change in the heart and mind of Mayor Wheeler there, he is now on the side of law and order. He's now on the side of cleaning his city up. He's now on the side of stopping violence. Why? Because he's had to live with his stupid decisions now for 9 months, and everyone has concluded, with the exception of the anarchists on the street, everyone has concluded it sucks. In Portland. Richard, welcome to the program and a very happy Tuesday to you.
Happy Tuesday to you too, Brian. You know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist by any means, but I can't help but I have not seen anybody do an investigation. If they have, then I just missed it. Are the same people that are pushing this issue three the same people that pushed the defund the police ballot issue here a year or so ago? Because this looks like it might be a backdoor way to get that same thing accomplished.
Many, many, many people have reached the conclusion you're reaching. I can't answer the question of where the outside money is coming in. I did see an Enquirer report, I think a couple weeks ago or within the last week, talking about it was some outside money that was funding the pro-issue three. So where that money leads or where it ultimately comes from, or if this is a veiled defund the police in disguise, I will just point out it's not disguised at all. It's police, it's fire, it's garbage, it's, you know, the Center for Closing the Health Gap. I mean, the groups that have already been labeled as losing revenue that are going to have their funds cut have already been on full display for all to read. So whether it is really is a masked defund the police or it's just, oh, I'm sorry, we're here to just correct the housing problem and we need money, effectively defunding the police. Either way, you come up with the same result. That's fewer police in the city of Cincinnati, where we're already down in numbers. Thanks, Richard. Appreciate the call. It's coming up on 8:16. Gene and Opie, you'll be next as soon as I get back. I'm going to mention Bonfire. A20 right now, F55KRCD Talk Station. Hope you're having a decent Tuesday. Phone number here if you'd like to call. Got a couple of callers online. We're going to dive on over to those right away. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or just hit #550 on AT&T phones. Of course, we're going to go in the order in which they received. Talking issue three a lot this morning. It's a no, a definitive no. The Charterites are against it. The Republicans are against it. The Democrats, the sane ones anyway, are against it. The only people in favor of it are those that I think are going to be recipients of the money. Sharon Coolidge on talking about issue three, among other things. Earlier, there's a forum on Cincinnati.com that you can listen to. The pros and the con folks are both going to be duking it out. At 1 o'clock, it starts. Cincinnati.com is where you can listen, and I encourage you to vote no on three just because it takes flexibility out of the budget. Period. End of story. Say what you want about affordable housing. You can't remove, without flexibility, that kind of money from a shrinking city budget. Gene, thanks for holding on the topic. Welcome to the program. Happy Tuesday.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan. I just want to say that this defunding of the police has been on the agenda for a long time. Back in the 60s, they used the idea of police brutality to the same end.
Yeah, it didn't work, though.
No, not yet.
See, that gene that I, and I, let me just interject, because I know what you're talking about. I was a political science major. I know it's a wasted degree, but I did go to law school afterwards. But and able to afford to support my family. But yeah, we talked about this a lot in political science. Back in the 60s, the theory was that the leftists would get the police to overreact, like the Democratic National Convention. All we need to do is show the police beating the crap out of people and violently reacting and overreacting to peaceful demonstrations, and the masses will rise up. Well, no. Mayor Daley and the rest of the country said, beat them up. Go ahead. They're being lawless. They're punks. They're leftists. So the world's changed, though.
Right. The thing has got to do with forming a national police force. Once you get rid of the local police, then you have the control for the central. It's just like the education thing. Once you destroy the local education system, then it's all whatever comes down from the top. Everybody has to fall in line with it, and that's why we have so much corruption in
right.
all the.
Yeah, they show up, Gene, because we have defunded our police either inadvertently or directly or because of budget crises. They show up and they say, here we are with money and funds and a ready, set, go police department, federal level. It's all going to be I's dotted and T's crossed. They're all going to be trained in how to de-escalate. Nobody's ever going to use violence again. No, it turns into a political operation. Jack-booted thugs asking you for your papers, Gene, and making sure you're a member of the appropriate party or be hauled away to the gulag. Yep.
Yeah.
There it is.
It's exactly that. Jesus bless you, buddy. See you later.
Gene, take care of yourself. Yeah, it does sound conspiratorial, but look at what Joe Biden is trying with this police act. Federal dollars come with strings attached. Now, law enforcement is local, and it should be local because that way they're accountable to you. Can you imagine accountability if law enforcement is left in the hands of politicians and bureaucrats in Washington, D.C.? Do you think you will ever have a voice in law enforcement again? If that were to become, if that gene reality that he was just talking about were to come about? Hey, Opie, thanks for holding. Welcome to the program.
Happy hump day to you.
Thank you, sir. Well, it's not quite. It's Tuesday.
Well, it is for me.
Good for you. It's always somebody.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? If Democrats vote to get spending money, that's a bad policy. So, you know, but at any rate, I got to correct you on communist terrorists not going to the southern border. She's about 50 years late because everybody from Kentucky defected in the 50s and the 60s to go work at Frigidaire and GM in Dayton.
Okay. Not quite sure what that means, Opie. I really am not.
What happened was when all them guys working in the coal mines, they were tired of breaking their back and get black lung, and they all left Kentucky and West Virginia, and they went to Dayton. I don't know if how far you up are on bluegrass music, but the Osborne brothers, that's how they ended up in Dayton, Ohio.
Well, okay, I guess I just find you painting with a broad brush that everyone moved to Dayton. I have had my grandparents were Lexington residents. My aunts and uncles all live in the greater Lexington area. They never packed up and moved. So I hear what you're saying, Opie. But
I'm being facetious.
I get it. Here. I know. I'm being that way in response, Opie. Got to run, man. Take care. Stay well. 825 right now. 55 KRC, the talk station. 749-5500. 800-823. It is 8:29 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station, fast approaching 8:30, and a very happy Tuesday to you. I always begin these intros with Empower You seminars with a thanks to Dan Reginald of Frame USA for starting the whole concept, and I've been doing it for quite a few years, and the stories and that you hear and the subject matters that you hear about and get to learn about are absolutely fascinating and very diverse. And joining me, a guy who's going to be doing one of these presentations tonight at 7 p.m. as they always start, Ray Hughes. Ray, welcome to the 55 KRC Morning Show, sir. It's a pleasure to meet you or hear from you today.
Good morning, and good to hear from you too, Brian.
Stalag Luft 3 is the subject matter. Before I dive on into that, I know you're intelligence operation airman second class, and thank you for your service to our country. I could go through your entire CV, but I'm more curious to know, have you met Robert Doolin?
Bob Doolin just happens to be a close personal friend, and I try to visit with him at least once a week.
I'm glad, Ray. He's a fascinating gentleman. I had the distinct pleasure of meeting him through a mutual friend, Steve Murray, who ended up being a career military man. You might know Steve as well.
Yes, I've met Steve also.
Yeah, yeah, Steve grew up the street from me, and I hung out with his younger brother, who was my age. But, yeah, Steve and I are good friends, and he actually invited me to lunch, so I had lunch with Steve and Bob Doolin over at the former Sky Galley Cafe, and that man is fascinating. He's as sharp as a nail, still at his age, and I'm glad you got to know him. And is that where you maybe came up with all the information and knowledge about Stalag Luft 3? How do you become fascinated in that subject matter?
A lot of information I received firsthand from Bob, and also I received a lot of personal information from Tom Griffin, who was a local Cincinnati airman who was captured in Stalag Luft 3 also, and also I got some private information about the tunnels from an actual tunnel digger who was a Doolittle Raider also, Davy Jones. And I had the pleasure of interviewing another of the American tunnel diggers, Buck Ingram. I do interviews for the Veterans History Project at the Cincinnati Library and Library of Congress also.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, I got to ask you real quickly, since you did actually interview a tunnel digger.
Yes.
I'm not prone to claustrophobia, Ray Hughes, but honestly, I mean, I've watched The Great Escape probably like a dozen times in my life. You know, come on, man, Steve McQueen, it's a great story.
Right.
And, you know, as Bob Doolin pointed out last time he was on this program, it wasn't even that long ago. It was in advance of his recent birthday. He said, yeah, the vast majority of the movie is actually fairly accurate, with the exception of the motorcycle antics and everything. But digging the tunnel, the fake documents they created, the idea they had access to things, it's like a camera, for example, and how that stuff was smuggled in.
Absolutely.
But the tunnel, that is something I could never do. Did this gentleman that you interviewed that dug the tunnel, did he personally have experienced claustrophobia, and how did that actually work?
Well, you had to overcome it. There were situations where the tunnel collapsed on them. There were situations where the main shaft even collapsed on them. And the other thing about this tunnel, it was 24 inches by 24 inches square. Now, you imagine a good 5'10" to 6'2" tall, well-built American airman or a British airman digging a tunnel 330 feet long. First of all, it was 30 feet down.
Right.
Straight down, and then 330 feet. You know, you were in constant fear the whole time of the tunnel caving in on you.
Yeah, and see, that's exactly, I got a shudder through me just hearing about it and thinking about it. Project yourself in that. This isn't like going into a cave that's been there for millennia, you know. This is, you're talking about something you just dug. And you're supporting it with what? Whatever random wood you can take out of the prison camp?
That's another fascinating story. The reason why the tunnel was 24 inches square is because that was the exact size of the bedboards and the bunk beds they were sleeping in. And they used 4,000 bedboards. And they chiseled them and made them fit together into a 24-inch square support system, and that's how the walls were built.
All right. How were they able to get away with that? How did the Germans not catch on to just something as that? Because everybody's got X number of bed slots in their bed, and, you know, the movie suggests that they were starting to run out of materials there after a while. And, of course, the Germans discovered some of the tunnels. But how is it that they failed to appreciate that the bed slots were disappearing one by one?
Well, what happened, there was like 10 bed slats in a bed. They weren't just three or four. And also, whenever they were getting down to where they were requisitioning more, they weaved their own type of rope out of screen that was wrapped the packages from the Red Cross. And so they would be sleeping on their own homemade rope, so to speak.
The ingenuity is absolutely amazing. I guess, you know, it's like prisoners in prison. You know, you have so much time on your hands that, you know, you devise methods of escape. That's exactly what they were doing. But the mechanisms and the things they had to go through to achieve their goal, like making your own rope from string, that to me is amazing. And they created their own passports, too.
Not only their own passports, they created, you know, their own maps. And there were probably 10 different types of passes you had to forge, each one separate and distinct, allowing you to move from one precinct to another, allowing you to get on a train, allowing you to be as a foreign worker to have a pass to go from Germany to France. I mean, it's an amazing thing. And, you know, that the whole concept of starting, never before had three tunnels been started at the same time. And like you said, they knew the Germans weren't dumb. They were going to discover one of them, or maybe even two, but they never in their life would have thought there would be a third tunnel.
And that's where the success came. Now,
and that's exactly what happened.
But it was only a success, and I guess on a propaganda level, because we know about the 50 men who were executed, at least anybody who's seen the movie. That actually happened, and Hitler ordered that. But how many men actually really escaped?
Well, they were making plans for 220 men to escape. It was going to be the biggest mass escape of any time. Actually, by the time they were discovered, there were 76 men that were on the run, so to speak. Of that 76 men, three made it back, two through Sweden, and one down through Gibraltar in Spain. 23, of course, were captured and returned to various prison camps, not all back to Stalag III. And then 50, of course, were executed, including the most important, in my mind, the most important man of the Great Escape, who I'm going to dwell on this evening, is Roger Bushell. He was the big X. But, Brian, quickly, I want to let everybody know, everybody says the Americans weren't part of the Great Escape. Until that tunnel was discovered, the Americans were tunnel diggers. They were helping out in every department there was. As a matter of fact, the head of security was Albert Clark, who went on to become a three-star general. He was head of security in the compound. So I want to tell the story of the Americans tonight and Roger Bushell with the Great Escape.
Fascinating conversation it will be. Ray Hughes is going to do it. It's tonight. Empower You Studio at Frame USA, which is located at 225 Northland Boulevard. If you want to show up, you can do that now. Alternatively, just log on in from the comfort of your own home. Just go to empoweryouohio.org, get registered, line, make sure you're online by 7 p.m. when it begins. Ray, thanks for doing this. I know it's going to be fascinating. I know you're going to get a lot of folks either dialing in or showing up tonight.
You'll know who I'm talking about, Brian, but I'm going to have a surprise guest there tonight.
Ah, I do know who you're talking about. What a small world. Ray Hughes, that is fantastic. Tell him I said hey, will you?
I will, but we're not going to say who it is.
No, we've all figured it out. I got a smart listening audience. Ray Hughes, thanks for the time you spent with me and my listeners this morning, and enjoyed doing the seminar tonight, please. And thanks again for your service to our country.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Ray Hughes, 8:39 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station.